At 8 o'clock one June morning in 1994, my wife, Mary Hudson, was in the kitchen sleepily making breakfast when she heard on the Northern Ireland news the words, "The funeral will take place today out of his home," of Detective Superintendent Ian Phoenix. A photograph of him flashed on the television screen. She was stunned, not knowing whether she was more shocked that he had died or that he had been a policeman. When she came up to my study, she was pale and shaken. "Ian's dead," she said. "He was killed in that helicopter accident." I looked at her surprised and perplexed. "Our Ian Phoenix? That couldn't be." "They were special branch and intelligence officers on that flight," I replied. "It was definitely Ian," she insisted. "It was his name and his picture in the morning news." The Ian Phoenix we knew was a hearing aid salesman, or something of that nature. But when we thought about it, we realised that his job description had always been kept rather vague. We knew only his wife, Susan, was a psychologist and they had owned a shop which sold hearing aid equipment for the deaf. Mary immediately telephoned Susan. "Susan, is it true?" she asked. I could see by her face that it was. It was Ian's picture she had seen on the screen among the list of the dead from the Chinook crash a few days earlier. With her customary generosity and grace, Susan replied, "Your call has made my day. I didn't know how to tell you about Ian. I didn't want you to think that we had wanted to deceive you." We had met the Phoenixes in 1992. They had responded to an advertisement we had placed in the Belfast Telegraph when we were trying to rent our house in Italy for part of the summer. They had taken the house in Trevignano Romano, a pretty lakeside village just outside Rome, for September. When they returned to Ireland later that month, having left the place in better shape than they'd found it, we were very impressed with them. We became fast friends when they invited us out to their home, a converted farmhouse on the Antrim coast, overlooking the channel between Scotland and Ireland. Ian was sitting in the main room by the blazing fire when we came in. Within seconds, I had a glass of good wine in my hand and we were chatting about Italy, wine, their trip to Trevignano and the drawbacks of living in Northern Ireland. We had returned there the year before, after spending 5 years in Italy. Before that, we had spent 9 years in New York, my wife's hometown. We were not finding the move to Belfast an easy transition. The grey, rainy weather, the low skies and the long winter nights seemed all too accurately to mirror the sullen, suspicious aspect of the place. Mary in particular was suffering from a feeling of isolation. She found in Susan a kindred spirit, one who, as an Englishwoman, had also endured the experience of being an outsider in the small, narrow world that was Northern Ireland. By that stage, Ian Phoenix knew a lot more about me than I did about him. He knew that I was a journalist and novelist. Susan recalls that one day during their trip to Italy in 1992, she was cooking in the kitchen of her house, wafting the garlic-filled aromas into the street in the hope that the locals would be impressed. Ian was perusing the library in the main room when he exclaimed, "Fuck me! Come and have a look at this! Bloody hell, I don't believe it!" He had plucked from my shelves the autobiography of a former chief of staff of the Provisional IRA. It was an autographed copy. He had noticed the stack of books on the Northern Ireland problem, most written from a decidedly nationalist viewpoint. Included among them were a few I had written myself. "It's a pity I can't tell Jack what I do," he lamented at one point to his wife. "We could have some really interesting political discussions." We never did have those discussions. Ian Phoenix could never reveal to me his role as a detective superintendent of the RUC Special Branch, in charge of a top-secret surveillance unit dedicated to putting behind bars some of the people that I, as a journalist and writer, met with regularly. Although he was decidedly diffident in political conversations, it did strike us that the little he said showed he had a keen awareness of the situation, something most middle-class people in Northern Ireland lack. Unbeknown to us, Susan and he often lament the fact that, because of the dangerous world they lived in, he could not openly and honestly associate with many people to whom they felt drawn. We saw each other on a few occasions after that first meeting. I recall saying to Mary, It's funny we don't hear from the Phoenixes more often, because we seem to get on so well together. She and Susan corresponded, exchanging observations about the difficulties they had faced adapting to life in Northern Ireland. Ian had been urging Susan to meet with Mary more often, because he felt it was too dangerous for him to form a friendship with me. But Susan had said she could not build a relationship upon a lie, even if it was one that was necessary to keep everyone safe. Mary and I did not realise it at the time, but our friendship with the Phoenixes was another victim of the Northern Ireland troubles. The last evening I spent with Ian was on the 4th of February 1994. He and Susan came to dinner with another friend, who was a prominent Northern Ireland journalist, and his wife. I was preoccupied with a book I was writing, A History of the Irish National Liberation Army, a dangerous Republican splinter group. I think we talked about it all evening. Ian said little, mostly just listened. Later, as he drove home, he confessed to Susan that the evening had been difficult for him, that he had felt at times he should tell me the truth. But he was concerned with the consequences. If the people I was meeting knew of my connection to him, it would put us both in danger. For some reason or other, that night I picked up my camera and, as the Phoenixes were leaving, insisted on photographing them. Ian at first refused, but then relented. I caught him as he was leaving through the front door. He would never return. 4 months later, he was dead. Only through his death have I got to know Ian Phoenix better. That is one of the sad ironies of our friendship. I realised as I learned more about him that we were rather similar, in spite of coming from different traditions. We both came from poor, working-class backgrounds. Mine was Catholic, his Protestant. We both left home early, seeking broader horizons. He joined the army. I took the academic route and went to university. We were both, to a certain extent, outsiders in our own land, marrying foreigners. By coincidence, we even had children born to us within a day of each other in the same hospital. Our paths had crossed then, and they would cross again, as he pursued the same paramilitaries whom I would chase as I attempted to document the story of the Troubles. On his trip to Trevignano Romano, as he and Susan perused my library, she picked up one of my novels, just recently published, and said, "Our landlord writes books. Maybe he'll write mine." Ian had replied with a smile. It was a wish he repeated to Susan shortly before he died. The following pages are the result of our efforts to fulfil that wish.